Our next case this morning is number 053428, Payton against the County of Carroll et al. Mr. Wilson.
Yes. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thaddeus Wilson, and I am one of the attorneys for the plaintiff appellants. The plaintiffs filed a civil rights class action seeking monetary damages, an injunction, and declaratory relief. Plaintiffs claim that the defendants unlawfully charge a bond fee in addition to and above the court set bail. On January 28, 2004, the district court dismissed all but one of the plaintiffs, all but one count of the plaintiff's fourth amended complaint, leaving only the equal protection claim. The district court gave lack of typicality as the reason for denial of class certification. The district court ruled that since the state act is no longer at the heart of this action, the question of whether an individual county did so in an arbitrary and capricious manner is a question which must be answered on a county-by-county basis. The court found that it is possible that some counties violated equal protection standards and others did not, and that no plaintiff's claim could be or is typical of so broad a class as plaintiff seeks to establish. Then on June 10, 2005, the district court denied the plaintiff's motion for class certification, and on July 15, 2005, the district court entered summary judgment and judgment on the pleadings for each of the county defendants except for Kane and DuPage based upon lack of standing created as a result of the denial of class certification. The plaintiffs argue that the dismissal, denial of class certification, and subsequent grant of summary judgment and judgment on the pleadings were improper and abuse of discretion and against the manifest weight of the evidence. With respect to the dismissal of the 12 counts, the posture of the case at that time was on a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss, where the court was to accept as true all well-pled factual allegations.
But that includes accepting the fact that the administrative fee was going to be from $1 to $50. It wasn't going to be any more than $50, right? That's state legislation.
That's correct.
Establishes those limits. And so, I mean, we don't have to take legal conclusions from facts. The only thing you take is the facts.
Correct. However...
And so under, to take your excessive bail claim... That requires one to assess, in light of the Supreme Court's decision in Schlib, in light of other things, whether something that could range from $1 to $50 could be regarded as, in an Eighth Amendment sense of the 8/14th Amendment sense of the term, excessive bail, right?
That's correct, but I think that would be done in the terms of a motion for summary judgment.
Why? Why don't we assume it's $50 everywhere? What's the summary judgment?
Then the question becomes, with respect to the excessive bail, that if you look at the fact that it's $50 not imposed by a court,
that's not a question of excessiveness. I mean, there are a number of different issues here.
Correct.
And the Supreme Court has jurisprudence about what the excessive bail provision was for. You know, bail so high as to be not bail at all, or something like that, versus, let's say, the statutory right to charge some kind of administrative fee, which seems to be fairly well established in Schlib against Kubel. Yes, you can have administrative fees if you want. I don't see the need to move, or at least I haven't heard from you yet, why at least count one on excessive bail had to move beyond the 12b-6 stage. Where are the disputed issues of fact? Where are the extra record materials? What is it that you feel needed to be in there?
I think when we look at the purpose and how the Schlib case came about. If we look at the fact that, again, because it wasn't set by a judge, that any amount put on top of that would be considered excessive. Now, I understand
that's
the court is saying that the court could look at that issue in terms of a motion to dismiss.
But I guess what I'm saying is that implicit in the argument you're making is a legal proposition that even 50 cents more on top of the bail would be excessive if the wrong person imposed it. And there's a legal interpretation issue there about what does the Eighth Amendment mean? Is that what it's talking about when it's talking about excessive, or is it talking more about just the sheer amount of the bail? Because 50 cents more is probably not going to be a make or break amount of money for basically anyone if you're talking about $2,500 of bail. So your argument is a different legal interpretation that you're suggesting here, and I am not aware myself of any cases that have read the Eighth Amendment that way. Perhaps you can suggest some.
I think even the Supreme Court it indicated that that any amount not set by a court, by an officer or person who is not beholden to what the legislative dictates, but can look at the circumstances right there would be excessive.
And where does the court say that? And B, why is it not a sufficient answer, as Judge Bucklow thought it was, to say that de facto bail for people in these Illinois county facilities is going to be a combination of whatever the judge says it is plus this little administrative fee? And if the judge thinks, you know, this person can't pay a nickel more than $1,000, the judge can just reduce the bail portion of it and have the total amount be $1,000.
But the judge should have the authority
Does have that authority.
Right, but the judge should have the authority to say, release on your own recognizance, and you go, and you are released. The judge, in this case, doesn't have any say with respect to whatever this administrative fee, whether it's 50 cents or $50.
And but why? What's wrong with that? Let me see. You probably don't remember this case because it's a little off point. But we had a case some years ago called Lee against City of Chicago, which had to do with imposing towing and storage fees for people whose cars were taken off to the city lots. And in this particular case, it was a man who was a victim of a shooting. So he was the victim, and the police towed his car off for evidence, and they kept it. And in order to get his car back, he had to pay towing and storage fees. And he said, that's outrageous. You know, I was the victim of this offense. And the city argued, this is an administrative cost to us. Sorry, but you just have to pay. And this court said, yeah, you're right. He just has to pay. So
it wasn't a criminal case.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was a criminal investigation.
But he wasn't an accused in a criminal case.
I understand that, but it was a property interest. He had to pay an administrative fee, just as these people have to pay a fee if they choose to handle their bail through the sheriffs, right?
We treat civil cases very differently than we
it's
treat
not
our
a
liberty.
Civil case. I mean, just don't call it a civil case because that's not quite what it is.
In the sense that the person wasn't charged. The person's liberty wasn't at interest, even though it was.
So
their
you're
property.
Not worried about a property interest here. You're only worried about a liberty interest.
There are property interests
well,
that
if
we're
worried
address.
About. A property interest, but, Lee is pertinent. If you're only worried about a liberty interest, then that's a different focus.
Our main concern is the liberty interest, though there is. We admit that there is a serious property interest involved, but the key here is the liberty interest. And once the judge affixes bail and the person pays the money, they should be let free. Whether it's a recognizance bond, whether it's a $200,000 bond, they should be let free. And if the judge doesn't have any say or control or discretion in striking the administrative sheriff's fee, then it's unreasonable because it is the court in setting bond determining that what is reasonable.
Well, but you're characterizing this as bond. I mean, the court has all sorts of fees associated with it, and if you call it a fee and not bond, then it's different.
In every criminal case that I've handled, the fees are usually assessed at the end of the case and when a person is found guilty. And that's when there are fees. You get a long sheet, and the court says, I'm assessing this fee. I'm going to assess that, and supervision. That's at the end. That's fine. A person has been adjudicated guilty. In terms of the class certification, if it may, I'm running into my time. We believe that the court should have certified the class with respect to all 39 counties. The court certified in the cases proceeding with respect to Kane and DuPage. We believe that based on the juridical link doctrine, judicial economy, that is the best way to resolve this matter, and therefore we ask that the district court's decisions be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Steve Pushis. I'm here on behalf of, I represent Carroll, Macon, Effingham, Sangamon, and Ogle counties, but I'm here to argue the case on behalf of all 37 appellees. What we have here, Your Honor, essentially is a statute that requires a fee for service provided. And the fee charged is the actual cost of the service provided. Pursuant to the Illinois statute. I don't know how you can have a statute that is more rational in its basis than that, more rational in its approach than that. The Supreme Court in Schlib basically said that the fees assessed in that case under Section 110.7 of the Code of Civil Procedure did not involve bail and did not involve questions of the excessiveness of bail. And I submit neither does this statute.
But Mr. Pushis, what about the hypothetical, at least, that could cover some people that Mr. Wilson's worried about, of the person who the judge is willing to release solely on personal recognizance, not a penny of bond or anything, you know, and he doesn't have $10 that he can scrape together, and therefore he has to stay behind bars. Isn't that troublesome?
Well, Your Honor, none of the named plaintiffs in this case fit within that hypothetical scenario. The only person who was issued a personal recognizance bond was Aaron Corson. And according to the allegations of the complaint, he was released without having to pay. So
is it your, as I can imagine defining, a class or a subclass of the personal reconnaissance bond. In fact, that was one of the requests here. Whether one thought of doing it statewide or whether one thought of doing it county by county. And is it that you just can't find the right plaintiff, in terms of typicality, or what's the problem?
There's multiple problems, if I might. And your question, it requires, it's almost like an onion, which requires peeling away different layers. Well, first of all, when we got to the point of class certification, all of the defendants presented the court with the affidavits. My clients, we presented the actual cost studies and the ordinances involved. And one of the things Your Honor will find is that, in, for example, the five counties I represent, we don't hold people if they're granted a personal recognizance bond. We don't
issue a fee. Let me ask you another. It's not completely off the question. Since the preceding attorney brought up our ages by accident, back 50-some-odd years ago, we had a pauper's affidavit. And if costs were assessed against the defendant, he either paid the cost or filed a pauper's affidavit. In any event, he didn't pay if he filed it. Is that still the law in Illinois? Is there such a thing as a pauper's affidavit?
I don't know, Your Honor.
paused on the threshold of a great discovery, because all you have to do then, if they assessed it, is file the proffer's affidavit and you walk. It doesn't make any difference. And I think that's a matter that would make the render the whole thing moot if it's still there, and it certainly was there for 200 years or 100 years before.
I don't know, Your Honor. I'll be honest with the court. I wish I had the answer to that, but I don't know.
Something to look into just for the hell.
Okay. Ken, do you want him to file a letter?
Pardon? I beg your pardon?
Yeah, I wondered if we wanted them to file letters about that.
I would appreciate it if you'd file a look into the Pauper's affidavit and see if it still exists.
Sure. We'll be glad to do that. But if I can go back, Your Honor, the whole issue on excessive bail and all of the grounds on which Judge Bucklow dismissed all of the counts that she did so as a matter of law based upon the precedent that we cited to her. These involve questions of law When you accept the allegations of the plaintiff's complaint as true, she found it failed to state a claim. I mean, Schlib went up to the United States Supreme Court on a motion to dismiss. The Buckland decision, which we cited to this court and I believe was cited to Judge Bucklow below, involving the varying percentages of bond fees in Pennsylvania, went up to the Third Circuit on a motion to dismiss. So counsel's argument that it has to be done on summary judgment, I think, ignores what went on in the district court. She said, as a matter of law, based on the decisions you've cited to me, including the fact that bail is not deemed excessive simply because you can't pay it, you failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So I would submit that Judge Bucklow was correct in dismissing the various counts that she did.
And I understand. What's the status? Is she proceeding with the individual claims and the DuPage and Kane County claims?
My understanding is that there have been classes. What happened is, after she denied class certification as to the 37 counties, she asked opposing counsel to indicate by June 24th of last year whether or not they intended to proceed on a class basis. He didn't explain to Judge Bucklow by that point in time, but subsequently he did. To follow up on the procedures thereafter, or what happened thereafter, at one point counsel failed to appear. Judge Bucklow dismissed for want of prosecution the class proceedings against those counties. She then vacated the DWP at the next court appearance on the condition that counsel prepare or provide opposing counsel in the court with the proposed notice to the classes. They did that. Kane and DuPage County came in and objected. And they've been trying to work out the issues on notice of the classes until just recently, when plaintiff's counsel asked Judge Bucklow to stay the proceedings pending argument here.
Okay.
So as far as I know, yes, Your Honor, there is a class action pending on behalf of these named plaintiffs against Kane and DuPage County, which raises the practical question, why do you need a claim against 37 other counties?
Okay.
Because the named plaintiffs can obtain
the
relief.
Issues, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In connection, and I'm not sure if Your Honor wants me to address the various counts that were dismissed, or if you would prefer me to go to class certification, because I'll be honest with you, with the court, even if you may disagree with Judge Bucklow on a particular count, I don't think you can still bring the 37 counties back based on the holding in Payton 1. Because in Payton 1, the court expressed skepticism about the juridical link doctrine and whether or not the juridical link doctrine is appropriate and that way to analyze the issue. And you said, go to the Rule 23 approach and do a rigorous analysis of Rule 23 and see if they can certify a class under Rule 23. And I think Your Honor specifically said, and pay particularly close attention to typicality, because that way we can determine whether or not your claim is more based upon the state statute or the individual practices of the individual counties. And that's exactly what Judge Bucklow did in this case. And taking in reverse order, and looking at the proposed classes, the proposed classes here, plaintiff proposes to certify a plaintiff's class and a defendant's class under both Rule 23b2 and 23b3. Well,
of course, there was no defendant class on the horizon last time around.
Right.
It was the individual counties.
Right. But what plaintiff has done since is he's added 20 additional counties since Peyton won, and then he filed an amended motion for class certification where he clearly set forth that he is seeking not only a plaintiff's class but also a defendant's class, which then takes us back to some of Your Honor's questions and comments at the last argument involving Henson and whether or not there can be a class under 23b2, and I think Your Honor indicated that there can't be a class under 23b2 based on Henson and prior precedent from this circuit.
Well, at the very least, this circuit's been very skeptical about, I mean, never is a big word, but we've been very cautious, I would say, with B2 defendant classes.
And with regard to 23B3 and Henson, Judge Posner expressed skepticism about a defendant class under 23B3 because you have the opt-out. And if Judge Bucklow would certify a class under 23B, all the defendants are going to opt out. So what's the sense in doing that? So that's just one layer of the onion in terms of analyzing whether or not Judge Bucklow abused her discretion in refusing to certify a class. Another layer of the onion is whether or not the claims are typical. And one of the things we pointed out through the affidavits we provided to the court is that there is no uniformity in the approach that the various counties take as to this whole bond fee issue.
The one thing that is uniform, I suppose, is the assertion of a right to charge something above and beyond the bond itself as an administrative fee for using this service, if you will.
Yes.
I mean, that, whether it's a dollar, whether it's 50 or anything in between, is a common ground. I take it the plaintiffs don't think even a penny is permissible.
Right, and I think that at the last time we argued the case, Your Honor asked opposing counsel if $1 would be too much, and he said yes.
Yeah.
So,
at least he's being consistent, right?
Exactly. But the point of the matter is, whether it's $1 or $10 or $15, it's not bond. And it doesn't make the bond excessive. And I've lost my train of thought here for a second, but with regard to typicality, the counties independently made the determination whether or not they want to increase the fee or not. I think in the motion to dismiss, in a footnote in one of the motions to dismiss, we point out that four of the counties still in this case, according to the allegations of the plaintiff's complaint, haven't increased the bond fee above a dollar. Each of the counties independently have their own cost studies, which looks at the individual factors or unique situations in each of the county, and even how they go about assessing the costs is different from county to county.
I understand you to say that some of the people with the personal recognizance bonds get let out and then maybe they can pay the fee later or something, or did you not say that?
Well, in my five counties, Your Honor, we do not charge a bond fee on personal recognizance, and that's laid out in the affidavits we submitted on behalf of Carol Macon, Effingham, and Ogle County.
So you just don't charge it at all? Yeah.
And I'll be honest with the court, this case has been pending for 6 years, and class counsel hasn't taken a single deposition, including the depositions of any of the affiants that were filed as part of the defendant's responses to class certification in this case. And then taking it even one step further, and this is getting to Your Honor's question, each of the counties vary in their application. Plaintiffs allege that in DuPage and Kane County, generally, bond fees are charged for personal recognizance bonds. In my counties that I represent, that's not necessarily true. Plaintiffs allege that in Kane and DuPage counties, you can't get out until you pay the bond fee. Well, that's not even necessarily true amongst all of the other counties involved in the case, let alone the five counties I represent. For example, from the affidavits that were submitted to the court, only McHenry County does that. For example, in Clark County, if they're unable to pay, they're released and the fee is forgiven. There is another county, Henry County, where the sheriff will make a determination if he can collect the fee through subsequent legal process. So there is no uniformity in terms of how the bond fees are even, once the bond fee is raised, how it's approached by the sheriffs. So in terms of typicality, Judge Bucklow correctly decided that there's no typicality here. And if you don't get to the issue of typicality, or if there is no typicality such that you can certify a class, then even if your honors disagree with one or more of Judge Bucklow's rulings on the motion to dismiss, the other 37 counties should be out of the case because they can't certify a class as to the other 37 counties. And if there's no other questions, thank you. Thank the court.
Thank you, counsel. How much time does Mr. Wilson have? Sir, you have 4 minutes.
Counsel said that this is a service for a fee provided. There's no different than I was reading last night, a sheriff in Clinch County, Georgia, charging an $18 per day room and board fee for any pretrial detainee in his jail. That is no different than that. The fact of the matter is, this is an issue within the purview of the court. It is a condition precedent to your pretrial release. It is a punishment, and indeed, plaintiff Peyton, he had to wait an additional 2 hours in jail while his family went to raise the additional money. Additionally, with respect to the Slip case, I really think that's misplaced and misused with respect to this discussion. You really have to go back to the history of that case and why it was brought about. It was brought about to get rid of the old loan shark and bail bondsman system. So the clerk is really in the sense of giving a loan in respect to that. Instead of paying a bail bondsman, you're paying the clerk. And the clerk at the end of the case is taking a fee that you would have paid to a bank or a loan shark or a bail bondsman. So it's a totally different situation than what we have here. And if you arrested on the weekend, then there's no way to go to the court to petition. Also, with respect to the pauper's petition, I know there are still pauper's petitions in civil matters. I don't know anything with respect to...
I'm talking about criminal matters.
I don't know of any in a criminal matter. And even so, this isn't something that's set by the court. It is, and with respect to the...
Each sheriff had copies of the pauper's affidavit, and they just signed it and handed it over.
I'm not familiar with that one, but we will look with respect to that. Also,
mind you, I'm going back some 35 or 40 years.
Also, I sat in this room on Monday, listened to some arguments with respect to the attorney general arguing for the governor. And one of the things that was complained of was with respect to, well, how do you handle this thing that they're just suing the governor or the attorney general to get at this state statute? And the attorney general argued, well, when the court said, well, why? How else would you do it? The attorney general said, maybe a class action against all of the state's attorneys. How else are we going to adjudicate this thing? And even if you say, well, let's leave out these other counties, if we are successful on the equal protection claim, then how do these other defendants get their share? They'd have to then do the same action against all of those counties. That is not a good use of the resources. Here we have an action going. In respect to typicality, it couldn't be any more typical. we only have at this point the one count, equal protection. So it doesn't matter all of the details that they say about, you know, well, we did this report and we used this person to come up with our figure. The bottom line is you charge a rate. The rate is not set by the court. And you charge different amounts from county to county, no matter what the charge is. And different counties assess it differently. And you don't have to pay it if you were able to bond out at the city jail or the police station before you even get to the sheriff jail. So those people who are at the police station, hey, they don't have to pay this. These are all issues, I think, that clearly smack with respect to typicality. And we shouldn't get off with respect to all of the details about how they came up with their figure, because that's not dispositive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.